Our reading is from the Gospel of Mark. Two readings, but they continue one after the other in Mark chapter 8. The blind man is healed at Bethesda, and then Peter confesses Jesus as the Christ. Mark 8:22. Then Jesus came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to him and begged Jesus to touch him. So Jesus took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when he spat in his eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked him if he saw anything. He looked up and said, "I see men like trees walking." Then Jesus put his hands on his eyes again and made him look up. And he was restored and saw everyone clearly. Then Jesus sent him away to his house, saying, "Neither go into the town, nor tell anyone in the town." Now Jesus and his disciples went out to the towns of Caesarea Philippi. On the road he asked his disciples, saying to them, "Who do men say that I am?" So they answered, "John the Baptist, but some say Elijah, others one of the prophets." Jesus said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered and said to Jesus, "You are the Christ." Then he strictly warned them that they should tell no one about him. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke this word openly. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus had turned round and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Mark 10, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many." In any other religion that you could think about, whether it's Hinduism, Buddhism, Christian Science, Islam, everyone in those religions have to work their way to be accepted by God, by their God. They have to work, work, work. And in the end, on their deathbed, the thought must be, "Have I done enough? Have I been good enough to be accepted?" Well, the good news for us today is that no, none of us can be accepted on our deathbed. None of us are good. There's none righteous, says God, not one. And that good news, so we're all in a level playing field. Doesn't matter how hard you've worked. Doesn't matter how good you've tried to be. God's above sin, hates sin, can't look upon sin. And it doesn't matter what we do. We'll never be able to break through that sin barrier to get to God. Doesn't matter how good you are. Doesn't matter if you're an elder in the kirk. Doesn't matter if you're a preacher. It doesn't matter if you're young or old. And the good news is, it doesn't matter if you're an addict. It doesn't matter if you've got a problem with alcohol, drugs, gambling, women, men, whatever it is. Some people have an addiction to gossip. Other people have other addictions to buying things. None of us are good enough to break through that sin barrier that keeps us away from God. There's nothing we can do to get us in, and there's nothing that we've done that need keep us out. Here we have Jesus in Bethsaida. Now, Bethsaida is at the very northern end, right in the tip of the Sea of Galilee. Nowadays, the equivalent village is slightly into the Jordan side of the border. But he's up there, and the people take this blind man to Jesus to get him healed. See, they've heard his compassion, they've heard his power, they've heard of him. And if you've any compassion at all, who wouldn't take a friend, a colleague, a relative who's in distress and trouble and try to see them be cleared of whatever it is, whether it's sin, sickness, whatever? If we have that compassion, we'll move ourselves. And this man was taken to Jesus to be healed. The strange thing is, Jesus took him out of the town before he healed him. And there's two accounts of this in both those readings. He spat in his eyes, laid his hands on him. What do you see? For the first time, he'd seen something. He says, I see men walking, but they look like trees. They're not clear. Then he put his hands in his eyes again. What do you see? And the man looking up saw the people, saw everything very clearly. Now, it's about the only miracle that Jesus had to touch someone twice in order for there to be a complete restoration. The purpose of that is going to become clear in the next reading. Jesus is taking his disciples, and Jesus has a mission. Just about 20 to 25 to 30 miles further north, there's a place called Caesarea Philippi. And it's like a large quarry, and one with one end open. You go in, and there's hills go up, and at the far end, there's this huge hill. And on this, Philip had built this place of worship and, not being humble, called it after himself, but being a bit of a crawler, he also called it after Caesar. So it's Caesarea Philippi. But in this quarry, beautiful marble, dedicated to just about every god. But down in the bottom left-hand side of this cliff face is a huge cave, massive cave. And it's called the Citadel. And it's believed that that's where the god Baal of the Old Testament came from. Believed that that was the start of the River Jordan. But it was also the place that the Greeks used for their god Pan to have come from. So the whole area was dedicated to different gods. It's destroyed now by earthquake, but it had been so, so beautiful, full of marble, and Jesus takes his disciples to Caesarea Philippi. And just picture the scene. They're in this absolutely astoundingly beautiful place, beautiful carvings, dedicated to all the gods. Jesus says to his disciples, who do men say that I am? And of course, they give various answers. Some say that you're Elijah, some John the Baptist, others say you're one of the prophets. But then Jesus narrows down the options, and looking at the 12, he says, who do you say that I am? And you can imagine, if you don't know the answer and someone's looking at you, you feel rather uncomfortable. And you can imagine how the disciples felt. then suddenly, that moment of inspiration that came from the Heavenly Father, Peter said to Jesus, "You are the Christ. You're the Messiah." What a revelation. Now, this is the turning point, really, in Jesus' ministry. Had he been successful in revealing himself to any of the 12? Time's getting short. Calvary's looming in Jesus' mind. Do these disciples really know who I am? Peter comes out with the inspiration, "You're the Christ, the Son of God." But he'd only half the vision. Because then he says, when Jesus said he was going to Jerusalem to be rejected by all the religious people and die and rise again, "Far be it from you, Lord. That shouldn't be." Why would he say that? Because he had a preconceived notion of the ministry that Jesus had. He wanted to have this itinerant preacher, now revealed as the Son of God, to continue healing people, revealing God to people, delivering people from demonic oppression, raising the dead. But he also wanted his country free from Roman occupation, as anyone here would if we were under an occupying army. But Jesus says, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Jesus is very forceful in the way that he speaks to Peter. Why? Because, you see, Peter hasn't had the revelation of Jesus' ministry. He said a revelation of who Jesus is, but not of his mission. Now, after I've finished speaking here, there's going to be sandwiches, tea and coffee, and people are going to queue for their sandwiches and their tea of coffee and coffee. And in your queue, imagine some of the staff at the church here, before you get your sandwich, they're going to ask you the question, "Who do you say Jesus is?" How are you going to answer? And you're always hoping that the person in front has the right answer and you hear it. And then you've got your sandwich, you've passed the test, and you're coming queuing for your coffee, your tea, and some of the staff say to you, "Right, what was Jesus' mission?" How would you answer that one? You see, Peter knew who Jesus was, but he didn't know his mission. Arthur Conan Doyle, as a joke, wrote to several of his influential friends, and he said, all he said was, "Flee, all is revealed." And within 24 hours, 6 very influential people fled the country. Of course, he was only joking, but it shows you the power of conscience. On the 15th of April, 1912, people were enjoying the trip across the sea to New York when this unsinkable liner struck an iceberg. People felt the vibrations of this massive ship striking the ice. Some of them went outside and were throwing the ice at one another, totally unaware of what was going on below decks. The panic, the work, the sea is coming into this huge ship. It is sinking. But the people are enjoying the trip. They don't want to think about that. They don't even know that. The only people that know that are the senior crew and those who are investigating the damage. And sometimes we can get a preconceived idea of something and we think this is the answer, but really it's not. What did Jesus come to do? What was his mission? "You are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Jesus came to die in your place and mine. Now, could you imagine one of these DVDs has my life story in it, right? All the good things I've done, all the good things I should have done are recorded, all the bad things I've done that I shouldn't have done are all recorded in this DVD. And you're all here, and Stan's going to play my video of my life. How am I going to feel? Even as a Christian, I'm going underneath some of these seats, and I am going to hide, right? Because I've done things that I'm not proud of, I'm very much ashamed of, both before and after becoming a Christian. But the good news for me is, I'm not the only DVD in here. All your DVDs are in here. So you're not just going to watch my DVD. We're all going to watch yours. So are you going to join me under the seats? Or are you going to brazen it out? I think we'll all be under the seats. However, why did Jesus die? On the cross, Jesus, the Son of God, knew that we could never punch through that righteousness, that holiness of God with our own efforts. But the Son of God became flesh. The Word became flesh, dwelt among us. He became light. He was the light of the world. And as he hung on the cross for 3 hours, there was absolute darkness. Because he was taking your sin and mine. The righteous one, the holy one. Us. Representing us on the cross. He took your sin. Could you imagine the millions and millions and billions of people who have lived since Calvary in this world? One DVD would crush me. I would be under the table. Every pedophile, every immoral, every thief, every murderer from the Calvary are in these DVDs. How many DVDs? And Jesus takes our sin and gives us his righteousness. So I can hardly hold this up. But Jesus was nailed to a cross. 2 pieces of wood. Our lifeboat, friends. He is our Lamb. And the darkness came upon him. The darkness came upon the world. Could you imagine how many life stories came upon Jesus on the cross? He bled and died for you and for me. I'm a father of 2 sons. If my son was to die for you and you didn't care, how would I feel? And you come in here today and you're not a Christian. And God sees that you don't care about his son. How does he feel? Let's bow our heads.